The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live.
Good Thursday. Thanks for being with us. We're going to talk about OJ's passing. It's where everybody is today, and I have a lot of thoughts on that. Mike Watkus will be with me at 10:15. We'll have Watkus on. There's none better than Mike. He was on the crime scene of Brentwood shortly after the murders. And Mike has written about it in his book, Story Hustler. Mike and I were together in the trenches for years when I was over in the television side. Nobody works harder. Nobody. No offense to any of you that think you did. You didn't. And he's just a good dude. And we'll chop it up on what he remembers with O.J. Simpson passing away. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. As always and through the years, that is Desert Financial Credit Union. We, as always, appreciate their support. The Masters, I was waiting to make sure that it was getting underway, and then the news of O.J.'s death happened. So the O.J. Simpson story for me, and those of you that are north of probably 30, yeah, about 30, maybe 35, remember that O.J. Simpson, when it happened, it took over our country. Think of anything, if you're under that age, that has gone on in America that had everybody watching, leaning in, and listening. This was pre this. So it was radio, and my time then was at KTAR, where I was the sports host, and we had general talk all day, and we actually carried the trial all day. Every day we carried the trial. It didn't matter where I would go, people had the trial on. They were listening. And Mike, being in Los Angeles, was all over it. What I remember vividly is how it was a black-white story for some people when it came to race. It was a black-white story for some people when it came to guilty, not guilty. And then there was just everybody right in the middle. Everybody was taking it in. There was celebrity, there were these big names in legal, F. Lee Bailey's coming on in, and who's Marsha Clark, and all these characters. And it consumed our country. It really did. There's been things through the years that I've seen that have consumed us. OJ would have to be top three, top four. OJ, for me, yeah, I interviewed him a couple times. His son was a running back at Army Navy Academy in Carlsbad, where I grew up, that area. So there was a side of him, and OJ was in commercials for rent-a-cars and in movies and Monday Night Football and on and on. He was the juice. He was the juice. I'm not going to throw any names out of today to comparable of OJ attached this. Just think of the biggest names in sport. The biggest. And that's what it was with OJ Simpson. It was the biggest name out there that was involved in something that obviously was a murder of two people. Then there was the white Bronco chase. Many of you remember that. Where were you on the day of the Bronco chase? I had RK surgery that day. I thought it was going to be really good. It was fine for like 25 years and that faded. But I remember my wife coming in the afternoon saying, "You have to come see what's going on. OJ's in a white Bronco." I said, "I can't see a bleeping thing right now." It was truly amazing. So when I say that the O.J. Simpson overpowered anything, I mean anything that's been going on in our country that most everybody across the country was gripped to and looked into. Just one story, and that was this. So, yeah, today we're going to talk about this because this is what is going on. I feel badly for if I get over to the Masters, I can find great storylines. I feel badly that there was a delay today for 2.5 hours. It means that Tiger's got to play a lot of golf tomorrow. I don't think he can play a lot of golf. He's going to have to play north of 23, 24 holes tomorrow, probably. How does he come through that? That's a lot for him to get through. I want him to do well. Yeah, I'm cheering for him. I don't think he's going to win, but why would you go if you didn't think you're going to win? You know, what is the point? The Diamondbacks are off today. Watched the Suns last night. Suns are just a hard watch. The Coyotes story has been going on since 1996. since 1996. They're gone. Oh, they're saved. They're gone. Oh, they're saved. Oh, they're going to build a building. No, they're not. Oh, it is all about the obstructed view seats in 1996. No, it's not. It's not all about. That's not how we got here today. That was part of it. It's one owner after the next owner after the next owner after the next owner after the next owner. It's one president after the next president after the next president after the next president after the next president. It's always something around them. So don't blame media. Don't blame lack of fan support. People don't know where to go. They're always involved for the wrong reasons in where they're going to live. Who's going to pay for it? It's always been an issue with this group. Not just this ownership group, the previous ownership groups. Oh, this land deal sounds great. No, it doesn't. Well, yes, it does. Well, what's behind door number four? So I have not taken the time to sit here and do show after show about whether the Coyotes should stay or not. Of course I want them to stay. They're not going to with the way that things have gone. So let's just stop with the shenanigans and, oh, well, you guys aren't supportive enough. That's just simply not true. Mike Watkus, next on O.J. Simpson. Thanks for being with us. All right, as promised, the venerable Mike Watkus is with us for a couple of minutes. Mike and I worked together at Channel 3 well before Channel 3 came to be for both of us. Mike was in Los Angeles. He was one of the first on the scene at Brentwood when Nicole was murdered. This is in 1995. His book, Story Hustler, is a must-read. You can find it on Amazon. And I want to have Mike on because you were in the middle of all of this, and I'm just curious, when you heard the news this morning that O.J. passed, Michael, what'd you think?
Yeah, a trip down memory lane, Brad, just brought back such a flood of memories. That day, the day of the killings, the day the story broke, for me is still one of the most significant days of my 40-year career. And I was lucky to be on a lot of big stories. But that day was so memorable. Early morning, I'm with a crew. We're racing out on the Santa Monica Freeway early in the morning on something that we'd had scheduled. We're going to go do some celebrity nonsense for Current Affair. That's where I was working.
That's where you were. Right. Okay.
And so we're racing down, and then the phone rings in the crew car. I'm in the back. The crew's driving me down. I'm not paying attention to anything. Get a phone call from, you know, with a brick phone. I can still remember the phone was one of those kind of things that wrapped around your head about like a cinder block. Pick it up. And so one of my guy that I knew from the show was screaming, "Get off wherever you are. Get to Brentwood." And at the time, he didn't know the details, but he said OJ's girlfriend or his wife or somebody didn't know what the relationships were, but knew that the woman linked to OJ and some other guy had just been murdered and this was going to blow up. We were fortunately on the freeway headed right in that direction, pulled off the freeway and we're one of the first crews on the scene in the morning with the crime tape around Nicole's condo. People starting to gather at OJ's Rockingham estate. I remember seeing Marcia Clark, a woman I'd never seen before, but sort of come through the crowd and go under the tape. And I'm thinking, she's got to be with the prosecution. For anybody who knew who any of these people were in that moment. And later in the day, we had contact with OJ outside the police station of LAPD. He, of course, had flown to Chicago and then come back. And it was like we had a moment where OJ was sort of vulnerable in the parking lot, didn't have his dream team together. And it was just an amazing day that, you know, I feel like I can still sort of taste the mist in the air as we're standing around the crime scene and the hubbub. It was an amazing, you know, and little did we know that it would lead to the trial of the century.
Right. And so you wrote about this in your book, Story Hustler, which is on Amazon. If people want to find it, it is out there. It's terrific. You touched on this in that moment of vulnerability when you first came upon OJ that day. Dive deeper into that moment where you said it was just fascinating what he was talking about or the interaction.
Well,
Yeah, so we're there, the bodies are discovered, the story is, and within, you know, it's LA, there's a lot of media. And so the story suddenly goes from 0 to 1,000 miles an hour within a couple of hours. Suddenly there's a massive, gathering around the crime tape. What is Van Adder and Furman and all the cops that we were there on the scene putting it together, trying to figure out what's going on. OJ. The murders had occurred, and OJ had gotten on a flight to Chicago, people remember. So as the dawn is breaking, he's in Chicago hotel room, and cops make clear to him, you got to get back. So they worked out some deal. He got the next plane back, and he met with them at Parker Center. So after spending most of our day at the crime scene and then bouncing up to OJ's big mansion on Rockingham, trying to get B-roll and anything, you know, early day. This is just early crime scene reporting on a big scale. And suddenly with L.A., you're throwing lots of elbows because everybody's now wants a piece of the action. We get word that OJ is going to go down to his coming back voluntarily and is going to talk to cops. So we bust down to Parker Center downtown, and it's now late afternoon. And we get there, and that famous attorney named Howard Weitzman, who was quite notable in the celebrity circuit, comes out. Then there's about just 20, I mean, it's a small group, 12 of us, crew members staking OJ out because we know he's already inside. Nobody's seen OJ. And Howard comes out and he says, well, OJ's there, but he's not going to say anything to you guys. And we'd already been waiting there for a long time. And it was sort of a diversion because suddenly OJ comes blasting out the doors, and this guy was sort of a blocking back for him, and he's going, you know, and bear in mind those first moments, nobody knew what was going on. Everybody still loved the juice. He's the guy running through the airports. He's right. The Buffalo Bills great. He's, you know, he's everything. People loved him. And so it really was one of those kind of Rorschach tests for America in a lot of ways, in racially and sort of celebrity justice, and a beloved figure now suddenly thrown into. And all my unique moment, I think, was it covered much of the trial. It was fascinating. But as OJ was coming out the door, he didn't want to talk. And he looked like every scared kid I've ever seen coming out of a courthouse who's suddenly in a whole lot of trouble and doesn't know what to do. And there was, because I regret the moment, I look back as thinking it was one of those handful of moments I could wish I could live again. Because all of us, I mean, I was with some grizzled old reporters. We'd all seen it before. But OJ was just such a special type of guy. Everybody loved OJ. And so he comes out, he's following Weitzman, they're moving towards an orchestrated car pickup in the parking lot, and they've sort of got it worked out. And but there's 90 seconds of him walking, and none of us really ask him the hardball question. OJ, did you do it?
Right.
And where OJ, you got a comment. OJ, anything to say? What do you think about this, OJ? Softballing. And yeah. I'd like, you know, and I don't for a minute flatter myself that I would have pulled off a Perry Mason moment and asked the right question and he would have. But there was I've seen it enough around guilty parties and scared parties. And, you know, it's like you get a sense for who's lying to you. And there was just this moment of vulnerability where he didn't have his shit together at all. No dream team, no Al Callings as acting as sort of his bodyguard. Nobody was there to protect the Jews. And somebody would have thrown him the zinger. Hey, OJ, did you do it?
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't. And, you know, I mean, that's just my moment of it. But then we went on to cover the trial downtown. We were, my sound man at the time lived in Simi Valley, and he had a mobile home, and I think we were among the very first people to park a little motor home in the back. I think we were the founding members of Camp OJ is what I'm saying.
Wow.
So, these things all come rushing back. But woke up and saw those headlines today, and it's just, you know, they bring so much. I know Fred Goldman over the years, and he's a very nice man, and I'm thinking of Fred. And Denise Brown, and Nicole's sister, who became quite a vocal advocate for victims. And so, you know, there's still a lot of parties that were affected by all of this.
When you go back on it, and I'm sure whether it's today or through your time in writing the book and putting it together, do you say to yourself, outside of saying, hey, Juice, did you do it, that there was a moment or two that you felt like I could have done more, or Brad, this was the moment where he's definitely guilty? Or did you flip-flop, Mike? I guess I'm asking about emotions and range of covering that.
Well, you know, I think I fell into that category. I just didn't want to believe it. Man, but I love Juice. You know, I grew up watching Juice and the airports and the movies.
Monday Night Football, you know.
Monday Night Football with Howard and
Airplane.
This guy, you know, this guy had woven himself, and a remarkable man in many ways, had woven himself into America, you know, Americana.
Sure.
And suddenly him walking out and seeing him look, you know, if you look at the video, he's wearing a white golf shirt and he looked hunched over. I mean, again, it was one of the few moments where you're going to see this big, badass football player look like a scared little kid.
Mm.
And, you know, and I don't. And does that indicate his guilt or innocence? I don't. But there was a moment before he got, you know, he went and got himself Johnny Cochran and Robert Shapiro and F. Lee Bailey and got himself, as he always had, a good blocking, you know, a good blocking line. And so he always had that going for him throughout his life. But at that moment, he was alone. They let him go. They hadn't arrested him. The slow speed chase wouldn't happen now for a number of days after. But that initial day when it was all coming together and we're all trying to get over either our own skepticism or just, oh my God, I had just been through, it was a moment of sort of tabloid nirvana, because in rapid succession we had OJ, Tanya Harding, the LA riots, Heidi Fleiss, the Hollywood Madam, big stories for at least for Hollywood, for that little town. And so, you know, but this just always felt different. And I became the trial of the century and was an eye opener for America to see. I always thought it was sort of a Rorschach test and probably more startling for white people than it was black people, because you had very different reactions among the two communities to the verdict. And you can understand where both sides were coming from, but they saw the trial in unique and very separate ways. And, you know, I think it's a fascinating study, still a fascinating moment in American history.
Did he do it, Mike?
I've people ask me that all the time. I know when I got there to the scene the morning and saw the brutality that we could see from the crime tape of that murder scene. I remember discussing that with some of the people who were at, you know, veterans at the crew scene. And they were, this is a crime of passion. And the only way you go and try to hurt and screw people up that bad is if you love them to begin with. Mm. You know, to hate and be that vicious, there needs to be almost that passion. And so I'm thinking, you know, those are my instincts early on. I have heard every conspiracy theory and every theory that points to somebody, and I think they're all bullshit. So, being an old crime reporter, you think you follow the facts, and I think the facts have always pointed directly to OJ. Yeah. But I posted...
You got some memorabilia there, I see behind.
This was a photograph that was on a now defunct tabloid called Star Magazine. Yeah. I think it was on their front page, but is Mae Dogan and OJ as he's walking out of the Parker Center that day. It was a very significant moment as the story was unfolding. And, people bear in mind, some years later, there was a civil trial. Again, the standard of evidence is different, but OJ was found completely civilly liable for those killings and ordered to pay millions of dollars, not a penny of which I think he ever produced. But, the criminal justice works in funny ways. And sometimes you win them and you lose them. And OJ definitely has won some and lost some.
It's good seeing you, my friend. I appreciate the time on short notice.
Thanks. Always great to see you, Brett. Anytime, brother. Best wishes.
There's Mike Watkus. Again, the book is Story Hustler if you want to find it on Amazon. And we're back with more after this time out.